This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Phil Stinchcomb is a Kalamazoo County Commissioner and is seeking the Republican nomination for State House in the 61st District that includes the city of Portage and is currently represented by Republican Margaret O'Brien, who is running for State Senate. Phil Stinchcomb, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks for having me.
Phil Stinchcomb, please begin by telling the audience some of your background and why you're running for State House.
All right. Well, my wife Pam and I moved to Portage in 1997, been living in the same city since then. We have three children, actually have a daughter here at Western Michigan, being a senior next year. Looking in my rearview mirror, it's kind of surprising. And I have two boys at Northern. Anyways, the reason why I initially got into public service was in 2008, I received a check from the Federal Treasury. That was TARP 1, and basically they were asking us to go out and to, you know, invest in the economy. Go out and buy a big screen TV. The economy looks like it's faltering. And I was kind of surprised by when I received that. You know, I was raised by my dad, my mom and my dad, who taught me, you know, put your hand to the plow, use your talents, support yourself, support your family, help your neighbor, that kind of thing. And when I received that check, it kind of was a wake-up call for me. And so every Friday night, we sit in front of, as a family, we have pizza, we watch the news. I met one time I watched the news, and I continually comment as I watch the news. At that point, I realized, okay, I can either continue to comment about the news, or I can show my kids, okay, it's time to get off the chair and get into the ring. So I had no idea even where to start. Fortunately, I had a neighbor who was on Portage City Council, Margaret O'Brien. At that point, Larry DeShazer, who was on the Portage City Council, had left and ran for the 61st. He won, so it was an open seat. That was in 2008-ish. So in 2009, they had an election for that, and so that's where I started. I didn't know where to start. I thought, okay, I'll at least run for Portage City Council. So it's a herd mentality. Anybody can run, and winner takes all. I lost that race, and shortly thereafter, I received a telephone call from Margaret, once again my neighbor, who asked me to run or consider running for the county board. I thought about it. I just got done with this race. My wife and I, you pour your heart soul into it. You get beat, so you question. But my wife gave me the green light, and really that's where I was supposed to be in the end. So I ran. We won in 2010, and I've been a Kalamazoo County Commissioner since then.
Alex, first question for Phil Stinchcomb.
Well, Phil, it's no secret that road funding's one of the major issues on everyone's mind, and I know it's something that you're passionate about and would like to make a difference with. I've heard you speak on it before. What would you support as far as road funding, and could you possibly see the gas tax being raised to help support road funds?
Well, I'll start with the gas tax. I mean, right now we collect 19 cents per gallon on a gas tax. The problem we have is that we don't set that aside for roads, so we use a portion of it. Currently, I think we're using 89% of that goes to fix our roads. That's problem number one. Two is I do think that we have funds that are available. You know, state legislators, we have $9 billion plus to spend in a general fund annually that's appropriated through the Appropriations Committee. I would look at using some of that money to shore up our roads. I don't think necessarily we need to raise taxes at this point. I think we need to bring back the trust of the people that, okay, we're collecting a gas tax. We're going to set that aside specifically for roads and not spend it on something else. I think we need to regain some confidence there and also look at funds we currently have. In addition to funding the roads, we got to be able to build quality roads. The state of Michigan, we allow currently 160,000 pounds to be dragged across our roads. Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin, it's all 40,000 pound loads. Well, okay, if we're going to build our roads and say that we can bring 160,000 pound loads across them, we need to build them to actually hold those loads. I think that we need to look at the whole structure of the roads themselves. Personally, I think they should be deeper. Now, that's probably going to cost more money. We're going to have to look at that down the road, but I think we need to, if we're going to allow truckers or people to haul those kind of weights, we need to build our roads accordingly. You know, I'm in a steel business. We deal with that every day. What they've done is instead of building the roads to handle those loads, then they turn around and regulate us by saying, okay, you can take 160,000 pounds across these roads, but you're going to have to put multiple axles on those vehicles, which just increase the cost to businesses. I mean, we have to have 8 axles in order to bring 80,000 pounds across Michigan loads, whereas you go down to Indiana, you got 2 axles, people are hauling 40,000 pounds all day.
So is it better to have the lower threshold of Indiana with a different – I mean, is that better for business, even though they're not allowing as much weight?
No, I prefer bringing more weight. But the argument there is that I've heard is, well, if we reduce the weight that people can drag across our roads, then that's going to increase the number of trucks that are out there. I'd rather have heavier loads if we can do that. All I'm saying is I think we need to build our roads to accommodate that.
But if you're going to build them to accommodate that, as you say, that does require more money. If you don't want to raise taxes, can you give me some specifics of where you would not spend money or cut money in order to spend more on roads?
Well, currently the budget right now, there's 45% of the state budget's allocated towards health and human services, 30% for schools, and then you got the balance for everybody else. I mean, 45% for health and human services seems to be excessive. I mean, I would start there. If I can't come up with $500 million or $1 billion, if the legislator can't find that kind of money sitting around there, especially with some of the revenue, excess revenue that's coming in, you know, I think that that's a problem. I think it's there. It's just we're not willing. We don't have the leadership in place to be able to make the tough decision or to try to persuade the other legislators that this is the right way to go. I mean, roads are the number one service, government service that we all use. They're very visible. We've been talking about roads for a long time. We've been collecting a sales tax, and yet our roads still suck. I mean, why? Because we've been neglecting them. There's going to have to be a multiple prong approach. My initial start would be look from within, and then if we can't do it, you know, we have to look at toll roading. I have no problem with that. Going across 94, take the federal dollars, tell them we're going to keep that. We're going to put it into a toll road. Something different. We got to do something. We have to change what we're doing. We can't continue to do it and throw Band-Aids or a couple bucks here and say that we're good, because we live in a four-season state. We need to be able to adapt.
You are open to toll roads.
I am open.
Alex?
Are you supportive of term limits? Or what are your feelings on those? Do you find them to be restrictive, or do you think it's a good idea with the way the current system's set up?
Okay. I would support a part-time legislature, but eliminating term limits. I think that they can't go hand in hand. I think that we can survive. There's only 4 states in the union that have a full-time legislature. We're one of them. I think if we went part-time, which I'm fine with because I do have a day job, I'd be happy to do that any time of the day, but then eliminate the term limits. I think that's probably the best way to go, and that's what I would support.
Would you have voted for the increase in the minimum wage, which was approved by the legislature and signed into law by Governor Snyder last week?
Probably not. It's minimum wage is not meant to be lived on. I mean, it was originally established or started for child labor laws, and now we've turned it into some kind of virtue that we need to be able to pay a person X amount of dollars to be able to live off of. There's no way somebody can live off of minimum wage as it is. I don't care what the number is. If it's $9.25, $10.10, $15 in Seattle, you're still not going to be able to live off of that. All it does is going to be able to increase all the other costs. You know, we've got regulations that government's putting on us now that's going to increase the cost of everything else. So really, it's a wash. You're not going to pick up anything by increasing minimum wage. By telling an employer, you can pay this person X amount of dollars, and that's going to somehow make them, you know, have a make a way of life. It's not. It's a place to start where you get in there and you realize, okay, this is what I don't want to do. So I'm going to use the talents that I've been given to try to develop those, and let those take me where I need to go. Long answer. I would not have supported it.
Is there any increase you would support? I mean, because if you left the minimum wage where it was at when I was a teenager, it would be $3 an hour. Do you tie it to inflation so it goes up incrementally over the years?
If they want to do it to that, if minimum wage has to be there where it's continually being reviewed, then yeah, attach it to something. Attach it to inflation.
Would you favor no minimum wage?
I would rather have employers pay people who are willing to work whatever they're willing to accept to work for. I mean, minimum wage in my business, nobody makes minimum wage. And we always pay higher than that because we want to bring talent in. So I think to be able to tell one person you're worth X and that's what I'm going to pay you, when you can negotiate your own value, that's what I would prefer.
So you would prefer no minimum wage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Minimum wage was something that passed with a lot of bipartisan support on both sides. If that isn't something that you could see yourself working across the aisle on. Are there other things that you could see yourself working across the aisle on?
Yeah, I'll work with anybody on good policy as long as it's good for everybody. What I've done at the county board, I mean, I've worked on both sides of the aisle to be able to produce what I think is good policy. I mean, there's really only two things that elected representatives do. Either they do oversight of the unelecteds that are actually running government, or they produce good policy. So if it's good policy that works for everybody, I'll work across the aisle to get it done.
Let me ask you about something which would affect both the job you are seeking and the job you currently hold, Proposal 1 on the August ballot regarding the personal property tax. Do you support it?
No.
Why not?
Well, actually, sorry. I do support it because it's actually a step in the right direction to eliminate it or to reduce it. My personal opinion, personal preference would be is just to eliminate personal property tax. To me, it's a duplicate tax. You know, we're already taxing people for the footprint of their property. Then we say we can tax whatever the equipment they've got in there. I'm in manufacturing. So it's a benefit to me because we're now going to be able to appreciate the value of our equipment to be able to, you know, bring down the cost. So I do favor what they're doing right now. I just think it's a step in the right direction. My personal preference would be just to get rid of it.
Would you not have any replacement revenue then for local governments which rely on it?
Well, when you eliminate taxes, the revenue comes from potentially could come from increased sales. I do believe that a sales tax change or sales revenue, right now we're at 6%. I think we could adjust that to help the locals.
How so?
Well, I'm a proponent of elimination of property tax, period, real and personal, because I think that here again, I think it's something that the state of Michigan needs to change. We have states like South Dakota, North Dakota, Texas, Florida. People are migrating to because why? There's motivation to go there. State of Michigan, okay, we've got right to work. That may be some kind of motivation, but it's nothing to bring people here. If we eliminated, for example, property tax and replace it with a sales tax increase, where people can actually buy a property, invest in a property, invest in their business, call it their own, I believe it would cause migration to Michigan and severe investment in Michigan. Now, if we change the current 6% that we have on the books, you could easily make that up and probably blow through the revenues in a very short period of time. If we went from 6% to, you know, a max of like 9%, let's say, and eliminated a punitive tax that's on the books for owning property to allow investment to come in here, I think that the revenue generation would be able to basically probably pave our roads with gold, and then the local municipalities would have plenty of funds to be able to operate off without relying on a personal property tax or giving favors to certain companies to move into their area.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Kalamazoo County Commissioner Phil Stinchcomb, who is seeking the Republican nomination for State House in the 61st District. Also here is Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Alex?
Phil, it's unlikely that any measure to legalize or decriminalize marijuana would get on the ballot this fall, but where do you stand on the issue? Would you be in favor of all-out legalization statewide or possibly decriminalization?
Well, decriminalization I wouldn't have a problem with. I mean, it's still a federal law. I think it needs to become a state issue, a state-controlled. You know, we got, you know, the city of Kalamazoo has their ordinance, and we got the federal government that has their laws, and, you know, we got all these different things, and nobody knows who's on first anymore when it comes to marijuana. Personally, I don't want to legalize it because I don't think we need to have another vice for people to get on to be able to, you know, get away from the stresses of the world. On the other hand, you know, I did participate in the Western Michigan discussion here regarding medical marijuana. I think that there are some benefits in medical marijuana that we should look at, but I don't think I would not support, you know, legalizing it to be able to sit at home and
smoke it.
Yeah, exactly.
Last year on this program, and Alex was there at the time, so he can attest to it, the House Speaker, Jace Bolger, said that he was in favor of some decriminalization and argued that the jail cells really shouldn't be filled with people who are smoking marijuana. Maybe it should be something more like a civil infraction, Pay a ticket, similar to speeding.
I agree.
The Center for Michigan did a survey of citizens around the state, and what they found was a status quo on taxes. There was no big mandate to cut them, but also people didn't want to see them raised. Is that where you're at, or would you push for some sort of a change in taxes if you're in the state legislature?
Well, I think that we need to review what we're doing. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, is my concept of changing the taxation. I think that going forward, we have to do something differently. You know, as a county commissioner, I know that we implement property taxes. I know how the process works. I know what's going on to maintain or to produce the revenue. Do I think it's going to last? No. That's why I'm an advocate for changing property taxes. I think the state of Michigan could be the leader of the nation to be able to change it, to make it more of a, you know, a consumption type tax. You know, we tax production. That is, people actually working, doing things. We're taxing that. We probably could spread out the tax base by doing more of a consumption type tax, which I would favor more of a sales tax. I think that would be able to generate mucho more revenue for any government to be able to provide the services that we want.
Alex?
If we could shift gears to education here for a moment, what are your feelings on statewide standards?
My preference is I like local control of education. I know that the federal government is asking all the states to use Common Core. You know, I'm not a fan of No Child Left Behind. I'm not a fan of anything really that Washington, D.C. is telling the states to do. My preference would be to have local control of education. We've got some great schools here in Kalamazoo County. I happen to choose to live in Portage. When we moved here, that was one of the reasons why we chose Portage, is because we believe that the education for our kids was best there. Are there other schools in the county that are good? Absolutely. But I would much rather prefer seeing all the control or more control coming back to the people that are actually educating our kids where we live versus somebody, you know, 900 miles away telling us this is what the standard that you're going to use to teach your kids, and we think it's best. I don't agree with that. I think we know what's best, and that's what I would fight for.
Since the state, though, does spend a large share of its budget on education, is there some sort of responsibility to say that you have to, at the very least, do this, especially as we're asking schools to turn out people who are able to step into jobs or, you know, meet some of the demand that we have in the business world now?
Well, I think that, you know, the education that we have, I think that what we're doing K through 12 is okay. Personally, I like to see a little bit more focus on finding talents in our kids. I don't think that sending every kid to college is the way to go. I think some of us were made to use our hands. We need people in trades. In my industry, in manufacturing, we're constantly looking for people to be able to operate technical equipment. You just can't find them. Here in the county of Kalamazoo, I've heard that we have over 300 jobs that are available. We can't even fill because we don't have guys that know how to run a slitter, cut the length line, turret presses, at least from my industry. So I'd like to be able to see a little bit more of that in our K through 12, especially in the high school realm. You get to colleges, I don't know what kind of favors we're doing for our kids at colleges, to be honest with you. I mean, from what I can tell or from what I've read, on average, the students graduating are carrying $30,000 in student loan debt. For what? For a job that's out there someplace? I mean, it seems to me that there's another area of change here. We're focusing on subsidizing or supporting the universities. Maybe we should start looking at the students and say, okay, maybe if we start giving you guys a little bit more authority, giving you some of that funds that we normally would give to a college, you choose. Let's have a little bit more competition here. And then even prior to pre-K, I mean, I'm not a big proponent of pre-K education because I think it's mom and dad should be raising your kids through at least kindergarten.
Would you have supported the state's share of the so-called grand bargain to settle Detroit's bankruptcy?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't think that taxpayers anywhere outside of the city of Detroit should be on the hook. They're not a private company. This is a government that couldn't control its cost. And now they want to have the rest of the taxpayers in the state of Michigan pick up the cost. I don't agree with that. I'm in the steel business. Nobody helped the steel mills when they went through bankruptcies. They consolidated. We survived. We came out. Same thing with Detroit. They will survive, but they need to do it on their own.
You've mentioned cutting regulations as a big part of your campaign. Can you just give a couple of examples where you think regulations are too burdensome and what you would do about them?
Well, I'd start with licensing. I mean, everything has to be licensed in the state of Michigan. You look at hair guy, or barbers, for example. I use those guys because I use one. Anyways, you know, barbers, they have to have like 2,000 hours of training to be able to provide a service. You know, to me, it's that seems to be overburdensome because the market's going to tell you whether or not you can cut your hair. Because if you don't cut people's hair well, they're not going to come back to you anyways. Now, I keep going back to these guys because I like them. But it doesn't mean that they are perfect with my hair. But I think licensing is one place I'm definitely going to focus on. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, other regulations that we're putting on manufacturers, especially with the roads, we're putting them in control of balancing out weights, be able to go down our roads. To me, that's excessive, and it's just driving up cost. So, you know, I'm going to look at licensing. I'm going to look at a lot of different things. But I think we have – well, there's over 18,000 regulations on the books today in the state of Michigan. Obamacare will be implemented fully in 2017. We're going to start picking up 5% of the tab and then 10% of the tab. There's going to be regulations attached to that. I think we got plenty of regulations. If it doesn't protect the people, I will probably work to eliminate it.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Phil Stinchcomb, a candidate for the Republican nomination in the 61st State House District, also a Kalamazoo County Commissioner. Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette is here as well. Alex?
Phil, obviously we're still awaiting a final decision, but what is your stance on the state's gay marriage ban?
Well, I don't think government should be involved in this at all, personally. But I know that, you know, running for office, this is a question I'm going to have to answer. I support what the vote of the people was. I don't even remember what year where they supported marriage.
2008. Well, or four, was it?
2004.
Okay, correct. Yep. So it wasn't too long ago, but it was 10 years ago. Nonetheless, I still support that. Only because I look at myself, I'm kind of a naturalist. This is how I look at the way we live. You know, everything that exists on this planet's got to do three basic things. You got to get up, you got to survive, you got to protect yourself, and you got to reproduce. And, you know, number three there, you can't reproduce. To me, that's why I wouldn't support it. But it's not that I'm holding it against people. I don't think it's personally a responsibility of government to tell them what they can or can't do. I think that it needs to stay out of it. But since it keeps getting dragged in, that's where I would stand.
Should government just be out of marriage altogether?
Yes.
What about things like, you know, next of kin and that sort of thing? I mean, you know, when you get married, your spouse normally becomes your next of kin. How would you handle that if the government's out of marriage?
Well, I mean, we're picking basically, you know, this was established. It's really picking winners and losers is all it is. I mean, why would government say, okay, we're going to support you, man and woman, and not support somebody else because originally it was founded out. Now, I do agree with one man, one woman, and in my personal humble opinion, the best scenario is one man, one woman, one lifetime. But for government to give tax breaks or any type of benefit just because of a marriage or whatever, to me, is they don't need to be involved in that. They, you know, the proper role of government is to protect equal rights, not provide equal things. So I don't understand why we have to select them to begin with in order to establish, I don't know, some kind of morality for ourselves, or is it just to give a benefit because, you know, we have two people working in a family and we want to give them a break.
Well, let me ask you, though, about a real-world example, which has been cited a few times. If someone's in a car accident, there oftentimes are restrictions on who can come see them in the hospital or something like that. Of course, if you're married, you can come see your spouse. But if you are partners who are not legally married, you may get blocked at the door. How would government handle that if it's completely out of marriage?
Well, then it comes to the people that are in the situation. I mean, if you're there in the bed and somebody wants to come visit you and you're able to say yes, the hospital or wherever you're at should allow that person to come in. I don't think any private company or private, you know, hospital or anybody would personally keep somebody out just because, you know, the government says that they can't do it because there's no marriage there. That's where I think that, you know, government needs to get out of there and allow us to be able to decide who we want to have around us, especially, you know, in a serious incident, if it's especially life and death. I mean, there's no reason for government to be there to say no or yes. It's your call.
Governor Snyder came out in favor of, or at least in favor of the legislature discussing amending the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act, which is the state's non-discrimination law, to include protections for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. Would you favor that?
I don't have a problem with that. I mean, if we're going to have it on the books where we have to identify everything under the sun, then so be it. My preference would be just to, we don't need it. But since government's got their hand in there and they want to make sure that everybody's following the rules, then do it.
You don't think the state needs a non-discrimination law at all? Protections for race, religious belief, that sort of thing?
My preference would be that, you know, people would honor other people and not hold, you know, not hold them, not be judgmental based on whatever they perceive them to be. They should operate out of fellow love to fellow, you know, to man, to their fellow man personally. I understand why government's doing this because it goes back several years, you know, with racial feelings or anything else. Now it's come to, you know, gender and everything else. And I just think that it's every time we turn around, more and more is going to get added to it. My preference would be is just let people respect one another and do it your way out of love versus having government tell you that you got to operate this way. Is that reality?
Probably not. If people don't respect each other, what's the government's responsibility?
Well, the government, then, you know, that's what they're doing. That is the government's. I mean, government is telling people how and who they need to be able to deal with.
But you, if it was up to you, would that law still be on the books?
Probably not.
Alex?
Phil, your opponent in this coming primary, fellow county commissioner Brant Iden, you guys came in together in 2010. You guys will be facing off against each other this August. Does it create an interesting dynamic working together now?
I don't think so. I mean, I like Brant. You know, I don't hold any, you know, he's not holding anything against me, and I'm not holding anything against him, you know, from what I can tell thus far. We have a good working relationship, so, you know, I think this is one of these things where we both feel compelled to go, and we're going to let the people decide who they want. And at the end of the day, if they pick Brant, that's great. I'll ride off into the sunset and do what I do normally. If they choose me, then fine. I'll go and do what they want me to do, and I'm sure Brant would support me, and I'll vice versa, I'll support him.
How does that experience as a county commissioner help you while trying to make this leap to a higher office? Are you glad that you've had, you know, that behind you first?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because anytime, you know, getting into government, you think, you know, everybody's well-meaning. You go in, you want it, you feel like you can do some change. But when you get there, you know, you actually learn that there's a lot of stuff going on. You think that you knew what was going on when you go in there, and you really don't. So there's a big learning curve. And so, yes, it has been for me very beneficial. I've learned a lot. You know, I've dived myself in to teach myself, to learn. And I got a pretty good grasp on how government operates, working with other people and trying to produce decent policy.
I never like to ask a candidate why they're better than someone they're running against. It seems like an easy question and oftentimes doesn't elicit an interesting response. But in this case, I think you and Brant Iden are kind of similar, at least from the outside looking in. And I guess I'm wondering for that Republican out there who is trying to make that decision, sees a couple guys on the county commission for roughly the same amount of time, seem to hold a lot of similar beliefs. What is something that you would say makes Phil Stinchcombe different from Brant Iden and therefore perhaps worthy of someone's vote on in August?
Well, I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think that there's two main reasons that people, representatives, two main responsibilities they do. One is oversight of the unelected people, those that actually run government. I've done that. You know, I've done my deep dive. I've looked at how property values and that stuff is determined. I've held some feet to the fire, accountability. I've asked the questions. You know, I'm engaged. That's how I see it. If they want to, you know, and that's what I'll do at the next level. I mean, I'm not going there to be, you know, the true party guy 100% of the time. I'm going there to work with the people, for the people, on behalf of the people. If I can work with the other side, I'm going to do that, to produce good policy. So, I mean, really, that's what separates me, I think, from Brant. You know, I've got some skin in the game. I've got a family. You know, really, when I first got involved in this, you know, I have three kids, and I look at their future, and I'm concerned. I'm motivated.
Phil Stinchcombe, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Phil Stinchcombe is a Kalamazoo County Commissioner. He is seeking the Republican nomination for State House in the 61st District. That includes the city of Portage. And thanks again to Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.